is remarkable. He comes up towards the winning line under Davy Russell to win his second Randox Health Grand National.
Desert Orchid, watch history being made. Roars of applause. The king's in his county.
Heading down towards the last ride in the champion hurdle, and it's Annie Power comes towards it now. She's about four lengths clear. Viciosi jumped it perfectly.
Hello and welcome along to another episode of the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. It's a bank holiday Monday in Ireland today, so we've got an easy listening show in store for you. Ruby Walsh and Paddy Power join me as ever, as well as our special guest, Mr. Mick Fitzgerald. We've got horses to follow for the jump season ahead and racing gold, and it's all coming straight from the horse's mouth. Hello and welcome along to another episode of the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. The gears are changing and the jump season is very much ramping up, and we're delighted to be joined by television's very own poster child himself, Mick Fitzgerald. How are you?
I thought you were going to say Ruby Walsh.
Oh no, well, both of you. I don't know, there's not much work. When you take the two E out of the equation, there's not much work to go around for anyone else. So the two of you, yeah, how are you, Mickey? Well,
great form, tell you. I tell you what, it was so nice to be back at Cheltenham looking at proper horses at the weekend.
Proper horses indeed. And as ever, we've got the regulars, Paddy and Ruby. Bank holiday in Ireland. Wasn't sure if Paddy Power would make himself available. Even though we are under lockdown, there'd be some sort of kind of, I don't know, Zumba class on a bank holiday Monday morning you'd be doing over Zoom or something. You'd be tied up, but you're here anyway.
Yeah, I've done my twerking already this morning, so I'm ready to go. And I agree with what Mick said, actually. It was lovely to see Cheltenham back. I mean, it does kind of stamp the jump spin back, really, and seeing the horse run around Cheltenham was great.
Twerking. Paddy Power twerking. My God. Well, we got lots to talk about from the weekend that was. Mick, you were in Cheltenham, and I suppose a lot of the headlines over the weekend will be dominated by Briony Frost and Frodan and another exceptional weight-carrying performance in the big race on Saturday at Cheltenham. He's just he's a fantastic horse, particularly around that track.
It was a shame there wasn't a crowd there to appreciate it, because, and I know Briony gets plenty of stick, but the one thing that she has got is a great connection with that horse. Never missed a beat all the way around. And Ruby will tell you, when you ride horses around Cheltenham, if you can ride one like that, that makes half a length at every obstacle, the rest of them are always playing catch up. And that was certainly the case on Saturday. West Approach was in behind him. I think Ruby's actually ridden that horse, and you just wondered how much he was going to find. But Briony had saved plenty. And it was a fantastic performance, especially as Paul had said to us in the morning that he didn't have the horse fully wound up for this.
Ruby, from a jockey's perspective, does that weight play on your mind in terms of how much extra weight you have to carry, how you ride the race? Are you trying to conserve energy as much as possible? I know she kind of bounced out and made the running, but you're trying to kind of really ride clever to kind of conserve as much energy as possible under so much weight.
It's not the weight the horse is carrying, Tom, because 11 stone 12, the horses in the Gold Cups will carry the very same weight. It's not the physical weight they're carrying. It's how much weight they're giving away. We keep saying, oh, weight carrying performance. He didn't carry 14 stone written. He carried 11 stone 12, which is top weight in most races. But it's how much weight they're giving away is the key to it. West Approach at 10 stone 9. But I think Briony did more than just ride her own horse. She stacked the race up behind her all the way from the top of the hill, slowed them down. West Approach has to come at tiring horses. She filled Frodon up all the way from the top of the hill, kicked off the bend. While she didn't get a brilliant jump at the second last, he was very quick, and she basically won the sprint from there home. I thought it was a really good tactical ride from her, but I thought that kind of a race really suits Frodon. He has the pace, being a 2.5 mile, Grade 1 winning 2.5 miler, to dictate to 3 mile handicappers. He's always going a gear slower than he needs to be going, and they're always at their maximum, and she's able to sprint away from them. Now, I think in against better horses, he won't be able to do that. He loves to dominate, and he loves to be in control. But when you get into Grade 1 horses, and you face down the hill in the Gold Cup with Lost in Translation, Album Photo, Santini queuing up behind you, instead of West Approach, they're not going to give it to you as easy. So it was a really good performance of the weekend. but I think we've all got slightly carried away by what he achieved.
A lovely dollop of realism just to start off your week with a bang from Ruby Rose. Paddy, good racing at Aintree as well on Sunday. Your old friends the Skeltons had a big price double, 50-1 shot winning the opener, and then they had a good bumper filly in the last, but the old Roan was won by Nutswell, 18-1.
Yeah, back to second actually each way, so it did okay, but yeah, it was a good look at the good performance. And funny, I always find it's the same every year, the old Roan. I kind of nearly forget it's on because you're so excited about watching Cheltenham on Saturday and then come into the Sunday. But another good performance, I guess, from Nutswell. Didn't jump that fluently, but kind of found plenty on the run-in and just got the head in front on the line. So kept the head in front of the line. So yeah, good performance. But I'm not sure it was a vintage race or anything like that. I think a decent race, good win, but not one we'd be sticking. I won't be sticking to my tracker anyway.
No, international racing highlights with a Japanese Triple Crown winner. Unfortunately, Tony Mullins was undone, and Princess Zoe undone in the pre-Royal Oak. But the highlight of the flat action over the weekend was most certainly in the Vertem for Surety. 3 years, a Group 1 abstinence for Jim Bulger. But Max Sweeney, Ruby, was pretty good.
It was, and I suppose with the timing of it as well, Tom, we think that Terence McSweeney died 100 years ago on Sunday. McSweeney goes and wins the Group 1 Virtue Futurity Stakes on Saturday. Obviously, Terence McSweeney was the Lord Mayor of Cork. He died on hunger strike in Brixton Prison back in 1920. So, yeah, Jim Bulger got plenty of timing right. I mean, it was a brave call to name the horse and then land him to win a Group 1 the day before the anniversary of Terence McSweeney. But I thought, to me, the highlight of it was Kevin Manning. I think at 53 years of age, to show his fitness, his skill, his hunger for the job, I think that's incredible. And I think when you look at it, and people, you know, in all sport and walks of life, how many people say, like, oh, he's too old, or he's over the top, or this, that, and the other. I think for people to watch a 53-year-old like Kevin Manning to do what he did on Saturday was spectacular.
Mick, I know obviously the flat lads get fewer knocks than the jumps riders, but how hard is it for a jockey to stay going, let alone until 53, but well past 40 is tough enough?
Yeah, but all you have to do is stand alongside Kevin Manning and see, like, you don't know how he's done it for so long, because you look at him, he's so tall, there's not a morsel of fat on him. And to maintain your body in that sort of shape for a prolonged period takes some dedication and it takes some will. And, you know, I take my hat off to him. You know, and he, like Ruby said, like 53 years of age, like I might make a comeback, you know, I'm only 50.
I'm only 41, Fitzy. You know, I'm thinking the very same thing.
Well, there is time if you wanted to make the exclusive announcement here, by all means, but you might need a couple of weeks in the gym before you do make the announcement. Paddy, go back to Jim Bulger, a man you know relatively well, upstairs in Leopardstown, next door neighbour, but I get the impression he would have got whatever satisfaction he would have gotten out of winning a Group 1 alone. As Ruby mentioned, landing the kind of anniversary and the whole story coming together very nicely would probably kind of been a very nice pat on the back for the man himself.
It'd be very, very satisfying for him, I'd say, and I wouldn't be lost on him. But yeah, a couple of good stories about him. But first of all, about his stable staff, when Soul Power got touched off in the Prix de l'Abbé many years, I can't remember what year it was, he just got beaten ahead. The day before that race, he was out for a walk around the paddock and a pigeon flew out of the hedge and frightened him, and he fell over and cut his leg and everything. I nearly didn't run. But Bulger's stable staff stayed up all night with Eddie Lynham's to keep putting poultices on and ice in the leg and all that kind of stuff to make sure he could run. So some brilliant stable staff. But yeah, he's a gentleman of a man. A lot of people are afraid of him because he's a man who has very strong opinions on things. And I remember Michael Ryan, who owned Finchgale Bio, was up at Mum and Dad's box in Leopardstown. And we had no remote control for the telly. And I asked him, would he go in and see, could he borrow a Bulger's one? And he was too afraid to go in and ask for lend of the remote control. So that's the kind of the impact he had on one of his big owners at the time. But yeah, he's a gentleman.
Can I tell you a quick story about Jim Bulger?
Do.
I was at a Cheltenham preview one night in Wexford, and they were asking for questions from the audience, and it was Jim's preview night. And this fella put his hand up and he had a cigarette in his hand. Now, your man must have been 30, I'd say. And he put his hand up to ask the question, and Jim turned round to him and he said, "Does your mother know you're smoking?" Your man didn't know where to put himself. Like, there must have been 400 people there.
Oh, very good. Very, very good. Well, I think there's a couple of people who are afraid of Jim Bulger, but I'm sure he's very nice once you get to know him. And onwards we go to this week's Racing Gold.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power. Paddy Power is streaming all UK and Irish racing on our app. No bet required. Just log in and watch. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Following a heavy fall in the 2010 Gold Cup, Cotto Star spent the best part of 9 months on the sidelines before returning to racing in Down Royal's Champion Chase. There had been calls, as there often are in these cases, to retire the champion, but in the week that Uncle Mo and Golda Kova were hitting the headlines at the Breeders' Cup, Cotto showed that at 10 years of age, there was life in the old boy yet.
Cotto Star has asked for effort. China Rock is headed. Sizing Europe has asked for effort. But Cotto Star has just hit the front. But China Rock is proving a tough nut to crack. Sizing Europe not out of it on the outside. They level off with two to jump in the JNWine.com chase. And Cotto Star, a winner 2 years ago, has the advantage. Sizing Europe is trying to close him down in second and making a brave bid. He is two. Back in third is China Rock at the second last. Cotto Star by a length from in second. Sizing Europe in third is China Rock. But Cotto Star, harder. Work in front is Ruby Walsh, but Andrew Lynch is equally as hard here on the near side with Sizing Europe, who's trying to challenge every inch of the way. Cotto Star by two lengths in the JNWine.com chase is beginning to see it out now and draws clear from Sizing Europe as they race up towards the line. Four King George's two Gold Cups and he's regained the JNWine.com chase for Paul Nichols, Clive Smith and Ruby Walsh. His 21st success, Cotto Star. Sizing Europe only 3 lengths.
Yes, Cotto Star winning the 2010 JN Wine up at Down Royal. Of course, that race is this weekend as well. We're building up and Ruby throwing our mind back 10 years ago. It doesn't feel like 10. It's scary when you say it out loud. But coming into that race off the back of a fall to sign off the previous season, were there doubts in your mind or had he been showing enough at that point to kind of say, no, he's fine?
No, he was showing plenty. Tom, Clifford Baker and Paul Nichols were very happy with him and they were delighted to come to the North with him. And I think the JN Wine chase suited Cotto Star, suited a lot of horses. Being a grade one, you didn't have to give away the penalty that you would have to give away in the Charlie Hall, which is on the same weekend. And Down Royal usually has slower ground than Weatherby would have. So for a grade one winner like Cotto Star was, Down Royal, it's an ideal time for a horse for a prep for the King George. He'd won it obviously in 2008. He went and won it again in 2010. And I think with the nature of Irish chases to English ones, where you build through the race and there's a bit more of a sprint finish in an Irish race, whereas a Charlie Hall, they will go flat out from start to finish. It can often be a better first run than maybe the Charlie Hall can be. So it's suited for lots of reasons. He was very good on the day. I remember the day more so for breaking my leg in the next race in Corrick Bridge, but that's only my memory of it.
Interesting, Mick, would you have noticed that difference in style of riding between the UK and Ireland at that time? Would that have been very much in your mind had you been coming back to Punchestown or wherever?
Oh, it's completely different tempo of race, Tom. It really is. As Ruby has said, you know, there's always two or three lads who want to force the pace in a lot of the UK races as opposed to Ireland. In Ireland, you're struggling to find somebody to make the running. Whereas in the UK, you're struggling to find somebody to sit off them a little bit. So very much so, jump out, flat out. And, you know, like I won the Charlie Hall a few times and you needed a fit horse going into that because it was pretty taxing on them. but the Irish races, the tempo tends to build. And if you look at the, if you looked at the sectionals, they would be going faster at the business end of the race in Ireland than they certainly would be in the UK. I think that's fairly general.
Paddy, will you remember those calls for Cottestar to be retired after the fall in Cheltenham? And then he came back and he won a King George and a couple of other races afterwards. But sometimes, and we'll probably see it again this season, people are very quick to kind of just go, retire him there, will you?
And it makes no sense. I mean, I totally agree with that. It makes no sense, like, to say, do you know what we want? We love this horse so much. I don't want to see him racing again. Do you know what I mean? It's like... sometimes sad things happen, like with Doran's Pride was killed and everything, and kept going at age 25, whatever age he was. But you know, most of the times, I think the trainer and the connections know the horse very well, and they know if the horse stops enjoying it. Like, a lot of horses just love their racing, don't they? And you know, you could say it's sad seeing a horse like getting beyond his former glory days, but if the horse is still enjoying it, he's still enjoying it, you know. And obviously, there's a belief there. I can't imagine that. I'm sure Ruby had some say in it as well, but I can't imagine that Paul Nicholls and Clive Smith were thinking like, Astrid, you know what we'll do? We'll try and get him to win a handicap in 3 years' time or something. I'm sure they still believed that he was capable of mixing it at the top, and they were right, because he was.
Yes, as we mentioned, we're building up to the artist formerly known as the JN Wynot, and now, of course, the Ladbrokes Champion Chase. Delta Work tops the anti-post betting with Paddy Power 15-8. But we'll hopefully see the likes of Presenting Percy, Chris's Dream, The Storyteller, Sam Crow is in there, Milan native, Fakir Dudery. Ruby, in terms of the Irish calendar, this meeting is a massive kind of turning point, isn't it? Like, if there was any doubt that the jumps are back before this meeting, like, there's so many big names do reappear up and down Royal over the 2 days.
They do, but different trainers target different places and different times of the year. You can set your clock by Paul Nicholls in Chepstow in October, that's when he will start to run and unveil horses. Willie Mullins is more Clonmel Isle Morgiana meeting. Gordon Elliott, he targets Down Royal. Nicky Henderson will be getting going by Cheltenham in November, but by the Hennessy meeting at the end of November, Nicky Henderson's horses will be red hot in the UK. Trainers are creatures of habit, and Down Royal is a meeting that you just should follow Gordon Elliott from start to finish through, because it's somewhere, it's up the road from him, and that's where he targets, and that's where a lot of his good horses start their seasons.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power. Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
They seek him here. Onwards we go. It's time, as we mentioned, with the jump season changing gears and kicking on, it's time for a few horses to follow. We've been asking our social media followers to send in a few. Niall Farrell sticking with Captain Guinness, even though he's very disappointed the other day. Ruby, would you be willing to kind of give Captain Guinness a second chance?
Yeah, he pulled up with a heart fibrillation, was the official report for his display. And look, horses can overcome that, absolutely no problem. But I was almost happy to see that there was an actual excuse for it and not some unexplained bad run. So, yeah, look, I think he's a very good horse, Captain Guinness. I thought he was very good in Punchestown last year against Andy Dufresne, and I thought fences would make him bring out an improvement in him. But he has to come over that physical hiccup.
Baz mentions a few. He says McFabulous looks a very interesting staying hurdler. Duffel Coat and the two bumper horses L.A. Bell and Grand G that both won yesterday between Entry and Galway. Mick looked very impressive as well. Any of those standing out to you?
I think the filly of Dan Skelton's I watched Tor win. I don't know. The trouble is with that, you don't know how deep that race was, and you know, you can get very carried away. A lot of horses finished very tired at Entry, so I just, in the back of my mind, would treat that with a little bit of caution. Look, this is the time where everybody thinks they've got a superstar, and there's quite a lot of bubbles burst around this time of the year. But there's quite a nice horse of Nicky Henderson's called Pipe Smoker, who's still a maiden. He ran in a few novice hurdles last year, finished second behind Sporting John, which is, you know, quite good form. He looks a lot stronger horse this year. I'd be just keeping an eye out for him. I saw him the other morning schooling, and he very much caught my eye. But Shishkin, who won that Supreme Novices Hurdle, I watched him schooling over fences the other morning, and he has the wow factor. He had it beforehand over hurdles, but watching him over fences, he looked the real deal.
Paddy Power, a horse to keep an eye out for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I'm going to go for two. Not exactly dark horses, but at the end of Cheltenham last year, if you said you can stick one horse in your trailer and take it home with you, I think Envoy Allen would have been one that many people would have chosen. So Envoy Allen is certainly one to follow for the year. And the other one was Aloha, same ownership, that was third, I think, in the end, and that the Champs RSA Chase. And just a young horse who I think will improve with age and maturity.
Very good. Ruby Walsh, a name or two for us for the season ahead?
I'm going to go for two horses. Look, in the novice chase department as well. And I know people are saying, oh, give us something we haven't heard of. But unfortunately, when COVID-19 kicked in March, a lot of what would be this year's bumper horses and maiden hurdlers went out to grass. So you never really got to turn the screw on them and to see what could be the best ones for the upcoming season. So we don't know when Willie Mullins is, and it would have been much the same in Paul Nicholls's, Nicky Henderson's, etc. Because March time would have been when you'd be finding out what you have for this year, but no one got to do that. So we don't have dark ones for you. Well, I certainly don't anyway. But it was two novice hurdlers that ran in Cheltenham. Neither of them won, but I think both could have improved to take on the horses that beat them in Cheltenham last year, this year. And that's Elixir Danny to go up against Shishkin, and the Big Getaway, who was third to Envoy Allen in the novice hurdle there. I think there are two horses that were novice hurdling last year, and Willie Mullins's, that'll make real good novice chasers this year.
A couple for me. Politesse for Lorna Fowler will go to Down Royal, I think, this weekend. She's a very good bumper filly last year. And Ruby Janadil for Willie, back in training, okay?
Yeah, he looks well. School over fences the other morning. He seems to be in great form. And the one you get Friday, Tom, to follow for the year, Carrigan Lotus, I thought she won well in Gorn on Sunday. Battled well to beat one of Paul Nolan's. And I think Carrigan Lotus is a really good filly, so she could be a good shout from a small yard.
She should improve a good bit for that run as well. Righto, time for Dear Paddy.
Oh, God.
Dear Paddy, it has been hard not to notice the insidious spread of something deeply unpleasant throughout society, which has changed it immeasurably for the worse. I am, of course, talking about beards. Once the preserve of real ale enthusiasts, beards spread first to hipsters and have now infected large swathes of the population. They serve no useful purpose other than to remove any doubt as to what someone's pubic hair might look like, because it's right there on their face. The last bastion of shaving seems to be racing. Ask yourself, have you ever seen facial hair in the parade ring? Should racing continue its brave stand against whiskers, or bow to the inevitable and permit Willie Mullins to sport a Hulk Hogan mustache and show Gordon Elliott to grow the giant Victorian mutton chops to which his face is unquestionably suited? Take it away, Paddy.
I think that's really weird, because I actually can't think of anyone racing with a big beard. And maybe that's worrying for race, that racing is that untrendy that no one actually has a beard. But yeah, it's funny. I actually noticed this at the Ireland-Italy rugby match. I was watching it on Saturday. And when they do the anthems, like the pointless anthem, and there's nobody in the stadium, but anyway, they do the anthems, they're going along, and you just see the beards just get longer and longer and longer, and almost everyone had a beard. And then, like, I think it's gone over the tipping point, and it's no longer that cool. So I think you'll find people starting to shave again. I think you heard it here first. This is a trend-setting podcast, as we always have been. I'm not sure beards will invade. Well, actually, racing will probably start growing beards about a year after they go out of fashion. But yeah, the beards, I tend to agree. Like, it doesn't bother me. If somebody has a beard, they have a beard. It doesn't really bother me. It's not something I spend an awful lot of time thinking about. So I'm not going to get too exercised about it.
Mick, have you ever flirted with the idea of a beard or a mustache or a goatee or anything? Soul patch, maybe?
I grew a beard last year. But, you know, like, I woke up in the night and I thought I was going to scrape the face off myself. It was so itchy. So that was the end of the beard. Gone. But it used to be a thing in the... I'm sure it was in the Irish rule book that you couldn't ride with facial hair, Ruby.
I think it was you had to be presentable. Something to do with what way you presented yourself to the clerk of the scales. And I think shaving could have been, you had to be in a presentable and respectable manner. Something along those lines, Mick, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that there was a line in there which said you couldn't ride with facial hair.
Well, there you have it, mind blown once again. Maybe the rules of racing are to blame for the lack of trendiness. It's not the people, it's the uptight rules. Right, now time for a few quick questions before we finish up. Jim Dudley, our old friend Jim Dudley, asks, I believe Brian Cooper is the jockey to follow this season. I think he's finally back to his best after injuries and loss of confidence. What does the panel think? Mick, we'll throw this one to you. I know Gordon Elliott has mentioned that Brian might be getting a few opportunities on the back of injuries to other stable jockeys, and obviously he's associated with Paul Nolan as well, so he will have a few chances, won't he?
He's huge. Like, it's a fantastic opportunity for him as well. Because, look, Robbie Power took the plunge and moved over to the UK to ride for Colin Tizzard. And Colin Tizzard's horses they're not running like they should be. So Robbie Power might be thinking, do you know what? I might have been better off just hanging on and riding in Ireland. But at the same time, for somebody like Brian Cooper, there's nothing like riding good horses that will help your confidence. He gave latest exhibition a great ride at Cheltenham, just wasn't good enough. So, yeah, perfect opportunity for him.
Ruby, it's linking back to our retirement question for Cottle Star, Dylan Delaney asks, at the tender age of 13, is Faheen really going to be aimed at Cheltenham? Do you think he might look at the Punchestown Gold Cup instead as an easier assignment? What are your thoughts on him racing for another year?
Where he'd be aimed, I don't know, Tom. There's no point in saying. And what my opinion on it doesn't really matter where he'd be aimed, be it Cheltenham, Aintree, Punchestown, wherever he goes. But he looks to be in wonderful form. He's in really good order. And like with Cotto Starr all those years ago, when he tells William Mullins that he's not the horse he was or isn't enthusiastic about it, then that decision will be made. But as we stand right now, I didn't see him working on Saturday morning. He was behind me in the string, but when we pulled up, John Codd was delighted with him. So it's all systems go at the moment, but the day he says stops showing the signs, he's not going to say it. He's not going to say, hey, Willie, I don't fancy this anymore. But the morning he doesn't show the enthusiasm and, you know, starts working below par, they'll pull the plug on him.
And the final question is for Paddy. Rachel asks, it's a simple bank holiday brunch for Paddy. Is it poached or scrambled?
Poached. In fact, that's what I'm going to go do now in a minute.
Very good.
The other thing you could do, actually, Rachel, I've got a little tip for you. If you get an avocado, right, what you do is you make this little mix. First of all, you the zest of lemon. So you grate the lemon, the outside, the skin. You add a couple of chili flakes and some chia seeds to give it a bit of crunch. And then you don't toast the bread. You cook the bread on a pan. Literally put oil and salt and pepper on a bit of sourdough. Put it on a pan and just kind of toast it that way because it gets the lovely olive oil taste. Then you put the avocado on it. You sprinkle the topping on it. Squeeze a little bit of lemon on it. And it's absolutely delicious and healthy.
And on that note, we'll leave it there. That's all, lads. Thank you very much. And we'll chat to you on Friday. Mick, you're a gent. We'll chat to you soon.
Cheers, lads.
See ya.
Cheers, guys.
Righto, that's all we've got time for on today's show. My thanks, as ever, to Paddy Power and Ruby Walsh, as well as our special guest, Mr. Mick Fitzgerald. And, of course, our thanks to you for listening. Make sure to check out paddypower.com for all the latest odds and offers. But for now, I've been Tom Nugent, and that has been From the Horse's Mouth.
From the Horse's Mouth is a Muddy Knees Media production for Paddy Power.
Actually, the one thing that might be a fly in the ointment for me, and not that I'll be hugely missed, I've got jury duty starting on Wednesday or Thursday. I have to go in, so I don't know if I'm going to get picked or not. But
yeah, sure, just keep me posted. Yeah.
I'll have a good few quid, you won't get picked.
Do you reckon? What should I do?
just turn up, sit down and say, my name is Paddy Power, the bookmaker. Yeah. And that'll be, you won't have to do anything.
But I wear a Paddy Power hat and a pair of jocks.
Conflict of interest already.
Yeah.
There's a fair chance those criminals will have an grievance with you. So there's just, you've no fucking issue. You will not be on the jury in any courtroom.
Oh, please God.